Hey, morning, folks. Anyone on the line yet?
Good morning, everyone. Is anybody on?
Morning, Mick.
Hi, Tracy. Did you hear it all from Rom?
Hi, guys. I'm on the line.
Ah, there he is. There aren't a lot of us this morning.
Who's on so far?
You, me, Tracy, and Kieran. Hart sent a note that he will not be available today, I believe.
All right, maybe we'll give folks a couple of minutes more.
All right, Ram, we have Stan and Nathan also joined.
Awesome. Hey, guys. Thanks for holding the fort. I've been gone a few weeks, so perhaps one of you can kind of catch me up a little bit before we get started.
Sure. So we've basically been going over the identity, finishing up the discussion around the identity paper, the system identity, and spent most of the time on interoperability document as it is. So I think there's just one section that's left in the system identities paper other than the ledger specific entries. And I think we've got names for most of those. For interoperability, so for interoperability, we're kind of, it's a difficult topic. So I think we've been kind of going back and forth on the definitions and what should go in the paper and to what into what level of details should really go into this particular document, you know, as a product of this group.
That's great. Yeah, I was looking at the system identities paper and it looks like there's quite a few changes and some of the paragraphs, the sections have been filled out. So it looks like we've made good progress there. So I guess the main thing is, you know, one section left and then we need to just get input on the different projects to kind of do that, right? So it looks like we're pretty close on that.
I think so. I just looked at it again. I guess in one of the calls, a new section was added. So I guess technically there are two sections. There's a new one that proposed for consuming identity from external systems. So there's a write-up and a volunteer there. So let's see.
Great.
Yeah, it was Jim Mason who was there. Anyway, so yeah, made pretty good progress.
Fantastic. Looks like I should let you guys, you know, take this more often so we can make more progress.
No, I think we're really looking forward to you resuming the leadership of this meeting.
All right. Sounds good. So why don't we get started? Just as a quick reminder on the antitrust notice that's there on the notes page. I'm sure all of us are familiar with it now, but go through the regular thing to remind everybody of that. And then perhaps we'll start off with just looking at the identity paper and seeing whether we can close out anything or just remind folks. Let me pull that up.
By the way, guys, I am able to join today.
Hey, Ben. Long time no hear.
Having fun, right?
Fantastic. We have a good turnout today. This is fantastic.
Right. For some reason, at State Street, everybody loves lunch meeting.
I've added the attendees to the meeting notes. If I missed anyone, please add yourself.
Thanks, Mick. Do we have
the link to the identity paper. Let's just mind it right here.
On the identity paper, I think I volunteer for a section on do we have a deadline for it that I need to shuffle my stuff around?
So looks like, so I'm just looking at it, the two sections that are new are like exposing identity to external systems. So I think we have Nathan captured here as the volunteer, and then we have Jim for the external systems.
Yeah, I'm still on the list or on the hook to get that done. And we'll try to add a reminder on that for the Indie call this week, because I know Jim is usually on our developer call. So we'll remind everybody that we're looking for help on that on Thursday.
Okay. Nathan, would it help if we kind of spend like 5-10 minutes just talking about it here and putting in some bullet points, or do you want to kind of take a stab at it first?
The last couple times we tried to do it as a group, it was clear that I needed just to go and write a paragraph for us to start with.
Okay.
If people want to take another try at it, I'm certainly not opposed, but I probably just need to go and take a shot at it.
Sure. Let's give it. Yep. If we have it by next week, next time we meet, that'll be great. If not, we'll just do it in one of our sessions. And I guess we have our. Are you able to come and join the 29th face to face?
I won't be able to join. I'll actually be in Finland for the My Data conference, which is a big identity conference for Europe.
You mentioned.
But we will have Daniel Hardman, who's one of the lead maintainers for the Indie project, that will be able to come. So you should get some good content from him.
Okay. Awesome. And is Jim on the call today? Doesn't look like it. Okay. So we'll just chase that down. And then I guess we just then have the rest of these sections on the projects. What do you think, how close are we, and do we think it's ready to kind of engage the marketing and the technical writer, I forget his name, Gordon, right?
Yeah, so Ram, I reached out to Meredith, I don't know. It's been a couple weeks, I think. I've lost track of all time. And asked about technical writers. I know he's busy right now with the performance. Gordon is busy right now with the performance and scalability working group.
Okay.
And so the thought was that unless we go with somebody else, it was probably going to be a while before Gordon would be available for us. So not sure which direction you want to go. If you want to see if we can find somebody else, or if you'd like to wait for Gordon on that.
And when you say a while, is it like a couple of weeks?
Let me see. Let me find that conversation I had. I feel like it was more than a couple of weeks. So let's see. Actually, I don't know if she ever got back to me on how long it would be if he was overworked. So let me reach out again and see if I can get an answer before we get off the call.
Okay. Yeah, I was just trying to see, where we should target for getting our because it looks like we are at least a couple of weeks away, and maybe given the historic pace of getting all the input, probably I would say 4 weeks.
Okay.
Should be fine. If not, then we can explore to see whether we can get. There was one person before Garden who was out on for
maternity leave. Yeah. I don't know if she's available or if she was coming back or not. But definitely I'm going to send a Slack to Meredith right now and see if we can get some answers back as far as like timing.
Sounds good. So folks, you think we can target maybe getting this all done first pass by us in, that is not in our next call, but the one after that, 4 weeks from now? Looks like we are almost there. There's two sections in the main paper, and then it's just getting input from the projects.
Did you say in 4 weeks?
Yes.
Yeah, I think doable on my side.
Mick, Dan or anybody in the Sawtooth Tide can corral them into. I'm sure the information is.
I passed this on to Dan. We just need to get a commitment from them. It should be a pretty straightforward to write it up.
Great. I guess the main ones, and Nathan, I'm sure you can cover indeed pretty easily, given there's plenty of docs probably out there. So the main things we would again need to worry about are Iroha and Burrow. I can reach out to the Burrow guys and see whether there's something that they can contribute. Anyone else has? I've reached out several times to the Iroha guys and I've gotten responses saying, hey, they're willing to do something, but I've never gotten active participation or great input so far. Does anyone else have a better connection into Iroha who can help there?
So Rama, I'll reach out to them. I guess the idea really is just to fill in the section on system identities for the Iroha section, right?
That's right. They can, especially if they can just read through the rest of the paper and just give the relevant, what we've described hopefully on the other sections is what we want. So maybe if there are any variations or approaches on the how and that each project has taken, that's what we're looking for. So at the very least, a description of system identities. Best case would be they can read the rest of the material, provide input on that, as well as make that section relevant to what's been covered on the paper already. That'd be fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send out a message. I'll copy you on it, and hopefully we'll get some responses back.
Sounds good. All right. Looks like we are in pretty good shape, and let's also check on when the writer is available, and then we'll go down the path of making this our third paper, then perhaps we can start looking at the interoperability talk now. Just posted that on the Rocket Chat. Dan, you want to kind of take us through that?
So we've one of the outcomes of the previous calls was that we added the use cases section and kind of put that towards the front to kind of let that drive the way to define what interoperability is through the examples. So far for the use cases, this was also, I think, Jim's contribution that we talked about like some logging, well, which is, there are different, we're talking about different types of transactions, some that just record information outside of a blockchain, and then some that would require cross chain transactions. So in a way, these use cases cover all of these. So I don't know if you wanna go through the use cases. I mean, I think we really wanna have the representatives for them participating, but wanna kind of quickly go through the overall structure, or what are you looking for, Ram?
I'm open. So I like the idea of having use cases and requirements specifically for interoperability. It gives us a little bit more of a framework. That's great. Just trying to understand logging non-critical transactions.
So I think this was referring to, well, one of the things is that recording of, as they've been, as it says, it announced recording of externally produced data onto the blockchain. So I think this was more of a recording the data that does not have direct linkage. So to be completely honest, I'm not sure how does the blockchain interoperability come into play. This is more of a other systems integration with the blockchain. Transaction double spend, that's somewhat more clear. That to me, that looks like the anchoring use case. Querying. Well, I guess this is more using the blockchain for the we're setting up the permissioning structures. I guess it would kind of tie in more into the identity interoperability as well as different permissions and basically portability of permissions. I'm not sure if we can talk about interoperability of permissions, but portability feels like the right word here. And the balance transfer, I guess that would be the basic use case of a transaction that actually crosses multiple ledgers. I guess it would be external transactions that impacts two ledgers atomically. And,
Could we, do we just start fleshing out those use cases? Maybe we'll start with the transaction double spend, transaction guarantor. Is that? Let's maybe talk about the use case itself, right? So this is trying to, we want to just go through an example and push that out.
Can try it again without having the original author of the text. I think it would be difficult to get into the mind. This was the contribution, not from the call, but kind of something I asked Jim to add as he was talking about a variety of use cases and using the use cases to drive the paper. So kind of added most of the section separately. So we did not discuss them in a lot of detail, I guess. So we're gonna have to be creative here. Because to me, the transaction guarantor sounds like this is the external anchor. So this basically recording the commitment to a different blockchain. That would be my interpretation. I don't know if other folks have different understanding of this.
Nick, Ben, any input to add? You can go and, you know, just take the examples of what are the interoperability use cases. So the obvious one is, I guess, if we generalize Quilt, that would be, is that the fourth use case? Maybe we start from there, right? So that we all understand pretty well, I assume. I'm just trying to see what's the difference between the second and the fourth.
Sorry, I was just going back through the notes from the last 2 weeks. There wasn't much on the July 18, or from the last two meetings, sorry. But we spent an awful lot of time talking about this last time. So, Stan, how does the usages section relate to the discussion we had 2 weeks ago?
Doesn't much.
Okay.
That's really stuck in the externalizing the state conversation.
Okay. Okay.
It's not that I'm biased or anything, but I would add revocable credentials to this list.
Really? You would? Man, I'm shocked at that.
Clearly unbiased contribution.
Okay. Is revocable actually a word?
Yes. There's no squiggly line once you fix the spelling.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's because you still got your cursor in the middle of it. You can noun any, or you can verb any noun. Isn't that how it works?
All right. Let's start with the simplest ones, and then I think the use case approach makes a lot of sense. To me, the simplest one, and I guess given Quilt is already there, is to completely generalize the quote-unquote atomic transaction across ledgers. That's, I guess, what you've been calling transaction interoperability, Stan. So just lay out the use case for that, and
so we're basically saying that the balance transfer is a it's the same as payments use case. Right, because if we use Quilt as an example, that is their use case.
Right. So would it be balance transfer or value transfer or something like that?
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about is you're transferring value out of one ledger and into another ledger.
Is that...
Yeah, I think it's helpful to distinguish asset transfer from value transfer in that way.
Okay. Yeah.
Are those separate use cases then we're saying? So value, and then we have separately the asset transfer. Is that?
I do believe that both of those are different. I may have dollars on both sides, and that has one set of implications. But if I have a unique asset, like a particular bond, mm-hmm. then the transfer problem with that one is a very different problem. It becomes an It becomes an identity problem as much as anything.
I agree with that statement.
And then the asset transfer.
So asset transfer, we are saying it's it is more identity of an atomic asset. Is that a right way to say it?
Is asset transfer when you, like the example might be updating the ownership on a deed when money transfers on another ledger? Is that kind of what we're thinking?
Yeah, I'm not clear as well. This is Mohamed. But could you guys explain when we do the asset transfer, how does it become
Nathan. Hi, yeah, this is Leonard. I think generally it's a transfer of any asset, anything of value as an entity. So yes, a bond, even your bicycle, if you sort of sell it to a friend, you know? So it's a transfer of ownership based on certain criteria. So yeah, it's the value and plus the entity.
Yeah, and this is where I think there's a difference between sort of value transfer, where you're talking about, for example, like liability transfers, where it becomes a claim against an abstract concept, right? So we have a universal notion of dollars, and we talk about balance transfer of dollars. I know what that means. I don't have to give you five physical dollars in order to transfer $5 worth of value to you. But if I have a bicycle, I mean, using your example, if I have a bicycle and I'm transferring that to you, the only way that I can transfer that is to physically hand it over to you. There has to be an explicit transfer. So if we're transferring value with something like Quilt, there is a notion of I essentially burn some value in one in order to allow me to increase value in another. But if we have concrete fixed assets, it's a little harder to know what to do with that without involving a more rigorous notion of identity in it.
So though one leg of a swap could be really an asset, and the other could be a more fungible, value, right? So, you know, if I'm paying dollars for a bicycle, a home, right? The home is, some kind of atomic asset with a specific identity. The dollars are fungible, right?
Yes, I agree with that, Ram, because there is value being transferred in terms of cash, a cash payment. Whether you take it to this loan from a bank, but that money goes to the buyer, to the seller, not the buyer.
Hello, guys. I hopped on a little later. What exactly are we talking about here?
It's the clarification between value transfer and asset transfer. And the line is not one bright line. For example, if you're transferring specific valuable commodities, you need to be able to know that the pool of the commodity is not in circulation in more than one place. So with value transfer, you're talking about essentially the double spend proofing, and that the asset can't be liberated in a different ledger while it's locked or being transferred on your ledger. And there's a lot of problems that come with that. And then the asset transfer problem, it encapsulates most of what value transfer encapsulates, but it adds a whole bunch of additional concerns around locking specific assets or specific resources and all the attributes that are associated with that, meaning you might transfer part of the rights to a particular object, but not all the rights.
So maybe we, balance, right. So balance transfer from one ledger, maybe we be specific, right? So just going back one level up, what we're discussing is the different use cases that we want to address specifically around interoperability between ledgers, right? So balance transfer of some fungible asset from one ledger to another. Similarly, asset transfers of quote-unquote atomic assets. And I guess the third one would be actually atomic swaps of assets, whether they are fungible or non-fungible between ledgers, right? That would be the quintessential, I guess, quilt-like. Do you think it makes sense to add atomic swaps?
When you say atomic swaps, you mean swaps of what kind? I mean, we're not talking about the financial instrument called swaps, are we?
No. What I'm saying is that if you have two legs of a transaction, how do you make sure that either both legs happen or none happens?
I think that the atomic swap is one of the primitives you have to have to accomplish value transfer or balance transfer, because if you're crossing between multiple ledgers, you essentially have to say that the movement of balance from one ledger to another happens either simultaneously, or you have to have some sort of escrow mechanism to make sure that the liability of the transfer is in the right place. I don't know if we're specifically into how we do the atomic swaps of double spend proofing, or do we want to just kind of try to describe the use case?
So Nathan, I was thinking that the transfer use cases could be even simpler, in the sense it could be like a wire transfer where only one party just transferring an asset to another party, and that doesn't need the atomic swap, in the sense there's no corresponding transfer from party B to party A, if you will. And then that the swap is needed when the parties are actually exchanging.
So you're basically talking about a bare payment versus a swap of value.
Correct.
So bare payment. Okay, even for bare payment. Go ahead.
Yeah, even for the bare payment, you need to make sure that there's no double spend and so forth, right? Just a transfer, whether that's fungible or non-fungible, you still need to figure out that it was actually done.
Actually, we had last time, if I remember right, we had talked about what are the basic primitives you would need in order to do a bare payment, or what's that part of? So, in that case, there would be some kind of escrowing mechanism, and then in contrast to what Mick said, which is basically burning the money, but that's not what usually happens. It happens that you you transfer the money to somebody who has presence in both ledgers, right? And that somebody.
Have discussion around a need for escrow, but I was thinking at least that the escrow is needed only when you have a swap. When you have a simple transfer, you just need to address the double spend issue. I'm not sure.
Quilt, but the point is,
Quilt has an escrow as part of its protocol, even for a value transfer.
Of course,
because that's how they do the atomic commit across multiple. So it becomes a primitive to use.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's still a what do you call it? You have to have some party or something that has standing in both ledgers, right?
Yeah, Quilt actually does that explicitly. They say that you have someone providing the lock.
Liquidity provider. I mean, that's right.
Basically,
you've got to have liquidity on both ledgers. Otherwise, how do you transfer payment? I mean,
well, and with Quilt's protocol, they have fees for helping or facilitating the transfer that helps incentivize that liquidity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are other protocols, Vipin, that are being used right now that require you to burn assets and prove burn of assets. So, for example, Bitcoin transactions where the destination is a guaranteed unknown key.
You would burn Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's actually really common in the identity space to say, instead of having an authority over a namespace, you have to prove that you're willing to burn money to gain an act.
It's essentially an expression of value or commitment. It's not uncommon at all for some of these protocols. So
you're saying that I want to pay Ram. Let me get this. And Ram is on Ethereum, I'm on Bitcoin. I'm going to burn my Bitcoin.
I'm not saying that I would do that for that particular transaction, but for some of the protocols where you're doing value transfer, that's exactly what you do.
So one of the things that you might do here is, in order to prove you are the real Vipin on Ethereum, you might burn a certain number of Bitcoin or a certain fractional number of Bitcoin. That way, off the Ethereum ledger, they could go look and verify that address had burned a certain number of coin, and that would prove that you have a commitment that you are indeed the party in question.
Right.
Well, basically, what you're saying is that is to prove my identity. I control a secret on Bitcoin, and I'm proving to somebody on Ethereum that I control that secret.
Instead of proving it as a nonce, you're actually burning some quantity to say, I'm a party who's willing to burn, 10 Bitcoin to say that this address is me in a public sense.
Right.
Okay, but that's not a payment use case. Are we discussing payment, or is this all everything?
This is all interoperability, everything. Number one. And number two, that is one example. There are many examples of protocols that do burning of assets in order to prove or to transfer value, right? If it's a one-way transfer, I no longer want to use Bitcoin to manage value. I prove that I burn the Bitcoin so that I can now realize it in some other token. That's not uncommon at all.
Hmm.
Yeah, because you're committing that the Bitcoin value no longer exists, and by having to guarantee the value no longer exists in the first ledger, you can imply that that value is now only encapsulated on the second ledger.
Precisely. By which you prove no double spend for future transactions. So.
Okay.
Is another name for burn-in similar to dissolution or removal? Removal of that particular value or token from one ledger because it's now been transferred to another.
It's not a perfect analogy for removal because the ledger semantics of a cryptocurrency are that the value is that rare information can't come into existence ever again. So it's more like the idea that you paid some money for something and then or you imagine that you could make material goods pop out of, into existence out of nothing. You, there would be no counterparty to give that value to. But if you could make the money pop out of existence in exchange for the object popping into existence, then no currency would have been created in the transaction. So it's kind of the essence of what you're doing when you burn Bitcoin in order to create some other asset on a side chain.
I guess if you take the typical, DTCC like use case, we typically think of immobilizing an asset. You can think of burning as permanently immobilizing the asset in one ledger to kind of move it to another, right?
Yeah, and it is
exactly it.
It is an extreme approach in most cases.
Yeah, it's the place where you see it most commonly is where some new coin wants to establish a base set of value, and they don't want to do it based on mining. Right, so you take value out of Bitcoin, for example, proving that you've burned it, and then you add that in, and then you can manage it in your token or your whatever your altcoin is. That way, I just posted a link to. I mean, you could do it. You can do a Google search for it, and you'll see many, many articles. So that would just happen to be the first one, but it gives you some ideas.
I'm familiar with the concept of burning, but I have to look into why that would permit cross-ledger payments. You know.
Yeah, and that's basically what I just sent. And again, that's one article. You can Google that. So I just, by the way, I posted that in the Zoom chat. I can move that over to Rocket Chat. So
yeah, you can move to Rocket Chat. So coming back to, Stan, the use cases, do we think that the balance transfer and asset transfer are different from atomic swaps, which probably is similar to like DVP-like, where you have actually a swap of two different assets going on?
Well, so I added a comment, and if we're talking about swaps, which does feel like a different use case, then we still have a DVP and PVP, right? So we're swapping fungible assets versus non-fungible. So we kind of have a complete set of one-way transfers and then the swap. And then the behavior will be different based on the type of the asset.
So you said DVP and PVP?
Yeah.
That's for types of atomic swaps.
Well, so Quilt is basically PVP, right? It's payment versus payment.
Okay. Can you tell me more? Payment versus payment in what sense?
Well, so currency transfer, right? It's currency exchange, where you have both ledgers have fungible assets, and all you need to adjust the balances for the equivalent value. Or whatever, it doesn't have to be equivalent. It's whatever pre-agreed exchange.
I guess let's assume that there is no currency exchange. It's just dollars between ledgers, one way. Is that a different use case or just a subset?
Well, one-way payment. I think this is what we're just discussing. As I added that node that balance transfer, sample protocol may burn tokens on one ledger to establish value on the other ledger. So that's a one-way transfer. You can do the same protocol for the value going the other direction for the swap, but then there's going to be have to be a separate mechanism to ensure the atomicity. So, and if we're talking about use cases, they're definitely different. Probably the tools, the protocols needed to enable them are going to be very similar, probably the same in most situations. But if we're going taking the use case first approach, then I think it makes sense to list them out separately.
Okay. So these are all very similar. Anything else? And we can probably generalize these a little bit and add them as kind of sub use cases or different use cases. If we generalize, go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, I think these are fine for the moment. I think when we start looking at more complex operations, you know, things like where we're actually tracking supply chain and issues like that, I think it's going to be a little bit more complicated. I think we get back to situations like, and I know we don't necessarily call this interoperability, but in a way it is. If I want to take some credentials from Indy and use those to generate an authorization in another ledger and use that authorization to grant access to certain assets in a third ledger, those are interoperability problems, but they're sort of a different breed, and they don't relate at all to value transfer. They simply relate to semantics of whatever operation it is you're performing. So
I think those are good ones to list, right? So identity, should we call that identity portability between ledgers?
I think identity portability is important enough that it should be called out one way or another.
Okay.
I think that's the tip of an iceberg, but it's the most important tip of the iceberg, or the most important part of the iceberg. So,
okay.
Well, we do talk about identity interoperability, so we want to call it out as a use case, right? Basically, not as a feature to achieve interoperability, but as a use case by itself.
I believe it's a unique use case of its own.
So I guess we should be careful about how we use it. Identity, interoperability, and portability could mean two different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I think of portability, I think of, how do I move my phone number from one provider to another? So if I try to generalize that, how do I move my identity from being anchored on one ledger to another ledger.
And some of these operations also are, this is where you sort of blur the line between interoperability and just sort of programmability. Because there are times when I might have a policy in the private data objects where the contract says, I trust Indy to make assertions, and if Indy says that this is an employee of Intel, then I will accept it and I will grant access to this chunk of data. I mean, those are the kind of things we want to be able to do. That's two very distinct ledgers. We're not combining ledgers, but we're making an explicit notion of we trust that ledger over there in our contract. So... I'm not sure that's interoperability for the purposes of this, but if you want that kind of application, I can certainly give you several very concrete uses that we're trying to work out right now.
But I think description just now, you used the same primitives that we talked about, which is externalizing the state on ledger, and then you apply it to a different ledger.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's sort of in that in-between realm between sort of programmability and kind of independent interoperability for it. But the primitives we expect to have available to us are largely the same.
Well, this is also why I like putting revocable credentials higher up on the list, because if you can show how you externalize your state and how you can validate revocation based on that externalized state, some of these swap and portability problems become easier. Because you don't have to rely on common identifiers, you can rely on the credential status.
it'll actually be a great exercise later on to look at how these use cases actually work together. Clearly, the identity and the swaps and the transfers, kind of, they're separate, but in reality, when you implement it, you have to have both mechanisms, kind of using both features, right? So the way these use cases were formulated before was kind of higher level. I think we've gotten a little bit deeper into it. But I think it may be good, and we'll be able to combine them possibly into higher level use cases once we've defined these.
Yep. It seems like a great first list. It sounds like we both need to think about what other use cases we need to add and then start fleshing out the use cases and then maybe then tying it back to how those use cases drive functional requirements for interoperability, which is how I would translate what you were talking about, you know, externalizing states and so forth, right?
Yeah.
All right, we are pretty much at time. Way forward, should we just keep pounding on this? Do you want to have a, I guess there's a working session planned on the, is that, when is our next meeting? Is that pretty much the week of the?
I think it's Wednesday.
That's Wednesday. That's when the meeting is, right? So I guess the all-day meeting is our next next one. Great. I'm trying to see whether I can still make it to the meeting.
Obviously, it'd be great if we could get you there. So
yes, I would love to be there, but I'm trying to figure out whether I can change my travel plans and change my commitments there. But it's not done yet. But I'll try to join. Sounds good, guys. Anything else that we should?
Yeah, one question on that meeting. Would it be worthwhile for me to at least plan like an hour or two on that day to join, to call in? Or
yes,
I think
it would definitely be worth it. We just need to figure out how to arrange the agenda to make sure that you're not sitting around idling, waiting for us all day. So I think that's really the question.
Right.
Yeah, I would like to call in as well.
Okay. I'll talk to Todd and see what we can do about getting something set up for dial-in, at least for portions of it. And Ben, the issue for you is that I know that we're part of the plan is to actually go through what are the specific characteristics for confidentiality and privacy preservation in each of the platforms. And so we were expecting you, hoping that you would help us write the fabric section for that.
Sure.
Great. All right, folks. Thank you so much. Looks like we're making great progress on all the tracks. So let's keep chugging along.
Cool. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, thanks.
Yes, guy. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, guys.